So this is the topic of conflict resolution. So I'm sure you guys are very excited about it because you've got lots of conflict in your life. That's why you're here, right?
Yeah.
What kind of conflict have you experienced in your campus ministry? With fellow students, with pastors, with people within your ministry, trying to connect with others from different ministries? What kind of conflicts? Give an example. Yeah?
I think different ideas or directional ideas for your specific ministry and what you want to do.
Yep.
What's beneficial for the campus.
Yep. Good. What else?
Disagreement on what a prayer meeting should look like.
Huh? No.
Disagreement on what unity should look like.
Uh-huh.
People being apathetic.
Alright. What's my phone? Anything else?
Generational difference.
Yeah. How has that played out?
It's rough. Takes a lot of humility.
Can you describe like a different situation?
It was more like just relationship wise. I think because there was a disagreement, or more like just different expectations of how things should go, or even how we should be talking, how Bible studies should go, prayer meetings, etc. And so,
yeah.
I think there was like hidden dissatisfaction from like a lot of different people that almost erupted.
Yeah, all right. So sometimes generational, like people just see things differently based on their age and where they've come from. It's a great one.
Personality.
No. How has that played out?
That just pops up everywhere. I feel like just depending on like who you click with and who you go with.
Good. Couple more examples. Good.
Miscommunication, commitments, or commitment levels.
Oh yeah. Yeah, thinking someone agreed to do something and they don't, or.
People being contentious about denominational differences.
Okay. Yeah, particularly with our work of unity, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for conflict just because we work with people from tons of different perspectives, right? Let's look at one scripture together, and it's kind of bridges two chapters, but it's James chapter 3, starting, I think, about verse 14. We'll read and make a few comments, starting verse 13, and then going through chapter 4, verse 3. James 3:13-4:3. While y'all are getting there, I'll just say kind of the goal of this is just to give, goal of this seminar is to try to give you some practical tools and ways to think through grid of how to handle conflicts more appropriately. And hopefully it will lead to fewer conflicts, or maybe not fewer conflicts because conflicts happen, but it will help you make better use of those conflicts. It's kind of my theory that conflict can actually be used to advance our work. So such conflict, if you can look at it, treat it the right way, it actually can produce a lot of fruit. It can be good for you and a friend, or it can be good for you and the ministries you're trying to work together. Because ultimately, conflict is just another opportunity to get to know someone. It's an opportunity to understand their perspective. And so if you can approach things that way, conflict actually produces fruit and can help strengthen your movement. So that's what we want to try to do. So hopefully this will help as it relates to ministry, but it can relate to your personal life, to your relationship with your roommates or whatever. James 3, starting in verse 13 through 4:3. Can someone read that out loud for us? Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done, and the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, and impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow and reap in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask God, you do not receive, because you ask the wrong with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures.
Cool. Thanks. There's a lot there. We're not going to like have like a big teaching on this, but just for discussion, what would you say are some things in there? Where do you see about conflict in there? Where does conflict come from? There's not one answer. There's multiple answers. What's that? Selfishness? Yep.
Jealousy.
Dissatisfaction.
Yeah. Coveting, wanting something.
I think it's interesting that he says, is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? And in another verse in the Bible, it talks about the fact that what we war against is not flesh and blood,
yeah,
but spiritual things.
Yeah.
And so conflict is that it's not actually the person we're conflicting with.
Yeah.
It's the spirit and the passion and the flesh behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. Even verse 15 to 3. That wisdom doesn't come down from heaven. It's earthly and spiritual, demonic. Yeah, that's always a good grid when you're dealing with conflict with someone, and to think that there's other things going on, be it spiritual certainly, but also you don't know anything, or as you grow to know someone, you'll know more, but you never know completely what someone's going through or their past or what things are going on, conflict inside of them that prepares them for it. What about the opposite question? Just a real quick survey. What are some things in here that it teaches about resolving conflict, or how to make peace, or what comes from peace?
Humility.
What's that?
Humility.
Yeah. It's key, right? Humility is the first thing.
Open to reason. Wisdom.
Yep. Takes wisdom. Cool. We didn't want to do a full, we'll look at a couple other verses as we go through, but really I just wanted to kind of walk through just a grid for thinking about conflict. First, there's basically two types of conflict, and then I want to look at a few of the consequences, because I think the weightiness of the consequences of continued conflict should be ultimately what motivates us to deal with conflict. We think about the damage that conflict brings, that will motivate us. So there's two types of conflict. We could say there's the responding to conflict, and then there's initiating conflict. Can someone read Matthew 5, 23 and 24, and someone at the same time look up Matthew 18, 15? So Matthew 5, 23 and 24, and Matthew 18, 15.
Not conflict.
Oh. It doesn't work. See, I've got conflict on my mind. This would be initiating.
So Matthew 18:15.
Yeah, Matthew 18:15. So basically the two types, meaning this is one where someone comes to you like, hey, Chris, we need to talk. This is one where you say, hey, I come to you and say, hey, Chris, we need to talk. So if you think about it, there's really two types of conflict, right? One's where you're going to initiate a conversation, or the other where someone's going to initiate a conversation with you. And from these two scriptures, we're going to see what does the Bible say that we do in each. So the first, in Matthew 5, who has that one can read it for us. Just anyone who can read it out loud.
Okay, what was the verse?
23 and 24, I believe.
Okay. So if you are presenting a sacrifice at the altar, and instead of remembering that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar, go and reconcile.
So what's that teach about responding to conflict or initiating conflict?
It needs to be dealt with quickly.
Yeah, you go do it. It comes before worship even. Like, so if you recognize someone's got something against you, you're supposed to be the one that initiates it. Now what's the other one say, Matthew 18?
If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother.
So now this is the opposite, where now someone sinned against you, who's supposed to initiate that?
You.
So, kind of got bad news here. You're responsible no matter what happens. Whether someone's offended you or you've offended someone, your role is to initiate the conversation and try to bring peace. It's so serious that it's like it comes before worship. And so this is what I wanted us to get, that no matter the situation, whether you're offended or you've offended someone, it's your responsibility always to go to someone. And so that drives us to what I think are really these three, at least you could say at least these three spiritual consequences. When there is unresolved conflict, three really awful things happen. And that should motivate us, because you got to admit, this is hard, right? Like, it's hard to initiate those conversations. Sometimes there's wisdom in trying to know when you should or when you shouldn't. We'll talk some about that. But ultimately, it's hard, because those conversations stink. So we want to avoid it, or we want to make it less of it. We want to try to do anything we can do rather than initiate that conversation. But if we really focus on, if we let this continue to go, and we look at these three consequences, I think then we'll say, oh man, we got to be motivated to take this step. This is why Jesus would tell us, take this step. So let's look at these three first. I'm going to give you the answer in a second, but someone look up 1 Corinthians 3, 1 through 4. Why don't you raise your hand just so we know who has it? 1 Corinthians 3, 1 through 4. Someone raise a hand. I was got it again. And then 1 Corinthians 6, verses 6 and 7. Cool. And Ephesians 4, 25 through 27. Away the answers while they're looking them up. So 1 Corinthians 3, 1 through 4.
Dear brothers and sisters, when I was with you, I couldn't talk to you as I would spiritual people. I had to talk as though you belonged to this world or as though you were infants in a Christian life. I had to feed you with milk, not with solid food, because you weren't ready for anything stronger. And you still aren't ready, for you are still controlled by your sinful nature. You're jealous of one another and quarrel with each other. Doesn't that prove you are controlled by your sinful nature? Aren't you living like people of the world? When one of you says, I'm a follower of Paul, and another says, I follow Apollos, aren't you acting just like people of the world?
Right. So what happened with, what did he describe happens because of their quarreling? What did it do to them? And what did he have to feed them? Yeah. It's like, guys, you can't grow. We can't even grow further in our faith. This is stunting your growth because you guys can't get along. And so that should be a motive where we're like, man, if there's this conflict, this is hindering the fruitfulness and the capacity of the body of Christ. This must be addressed. So now the 1 Corinthians 6, verses 6 and 7.
But brother goes to law against brother, and that before unbelievers. To have lawsuits at all with one another is already defeat for you. Why not rather suffer wrong? Why not rather be defrauded?
Right. So if you're familiar in this passage, Paul's addressing the Corinthians were actually suing each other. And he's saying, now brother's going to sue against brother. And what does he say there? He says, you've already been... What did that verse say?
Defrauded?
Or just beforehand. Already been defeated, right? The very fact, he's Paul's concern when he's writing them is you're doing this, and he says this in the presence of unbelievers. Like, oh my gosh, so you're ruining your witness. Like, here you are fighting against each other when we've got these unbelievers here watching this. It says you've already been defeated. One of my favorite lines, actually, in all scripture, Paul would say, why not rather be wrong? Why not rather be defrauded? Like, man, such humility. Like, I would rather just be wronged and forgive someone for the sake of the gospel and the witness that we have. And that's powerful. Why not rather be wronged? And the third thing is it gives the enemy a foothold. So who has the Ephesians 4?
It says, therefore you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor. For we are all members of one body. If in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. Do not give the devil a foothold.
All right. So if you let the sun go down on your anger, if you're holding anger inside of you, what you're doing is you're giving the enemy ground. And the enemy's taking more and more ground. So you can see, we could probably list other reasons too, but if you just look at these three, don't you think conflict resolution is pretty serious? Like, okay, it sucks to have to initiate it, but we probably should. Because I want the church to grow. I want to improve our witness. And I don't want to give the enemy any more ground. So I want to give you guys just a couple tips on some things that you can think about, just a few tips, and then we're going to talk about this other side of the thing, of the page here, just a couple key principles. So the first one is, we'll say, focus on the relationship. Always make the relationship the number one goal when you're into a conflict conversation with someone. Because ultimately, that's what you're trying to preserve more than anything else, right? Like, you just want the relationship to be restored. That's what's most important. And so sometimes we go into a conflict and we're trying to win an argument, you know, or we're trying to have our way, or whatever, you know, other things that even the James passage describes, that conflict that comes. If we can somehow take a step back and say what's most important here is a relationship and keep that as the goal, like, I want this relationship to be restored. That's the number one thing. It allows you to deal with some of the surface level stuff and forgive, because you recognize the relationship is so much more important. Second one, these next two are somewhat similar, so I'll hit them together, is pick your battles. And refuse to be offended. Pick your battles. That's a huge one, right? Like, you can't, when you're talking about conflict resolution, we're not talking about like starting a fight every time your roommate doesn't do the dishes. But eventually, yeah, you're going to have a talk about those dishes, you know? So whatever it is, I would say probably one of the keys to a successful marriage is learning to overlook each other's offenses. To be real honest, I think it's something that Brenda and I do really well. Like, we don't make a big deal out of little things, you know? There's a time to talk, and then we'll address an issue when we need to. But to be in a relationship with anyone, to be part of a team and work towards something together, there's going to be tons of little things that happen, right? It's just the nature of the differences of personality. It's the nature of people's generational differences. It's the nature of people coming from different ministry philosophies and having different ideas on how to accomplish a goal. So there's always going to be little conflicts, but the trick is learning which ones do we press into and which ones do we just overlook. For the sake of time, we won't look it up, but Proverbs, I think it's 19:11, says it's to God's glory that we can overlook an offense. And there's just a lot of wisdom to that, just to say, hey, I'm not going to be offended. One of the things that Jackson Sunyanga, we brought a guy from Uganda to Res Week many, many years ago at UT. One of the things that always stood with me from his telling what the pastors and the ways that they had worked together in Uganda, he says, we made a covenant that we refused to be offended by one another. So we're like, how do you do that? Like, can you just refuse? Like, what if someone offends you? We're not going to be offended. And I just thought, wow, that's like pretty powerful. I don't think I can tell you exactly how to walk it out, but if you can kind of adapt that mindset, that, you know, like, I'm not going to be offended. I'm not going to let, you know, someone's different views or different personality or whatever's happening hurt me or cause me to have an offense or have a grudge against someone. That's super powerful. But you couple those with this other one that is really important too, is deal with it. So kind of the opposite perspective. This is where Brenda and I probably struggle, because sometimes there's wisdom to refusing to be offended, but sometimes you can use that as an excuse to ultimately not deal with what a real problem is. And so you're trying to say, oh, well, I'm just easygoing and refusing to be offended and not going to be bothered by this. But meanwhile, you've got something starting to build up inside. And then finally, when you do have to talk about it, it's like an eruption. And it was, you know, in a moment of rage or frustration that you handle the situation instead of, you know, these conversations, which seem so purposeful, right? They weren't like in the moment, bam, conflict happened out of nowhere. It's like, oh, I recognize something. We're going to go talk about this. That's very different. But if you don't deal with it, what's going to happen is you're going to start to build up, and it's not going to come out of a place where you've decided we need to have this conversation. It's going to come up because the conversation just happened upon you, which we've all been there, right? So there's something, some ways to grow from that as well. This one, of course, is important, is forgive. Don't hold a grudge. I don't think that needs a whole lot of explanation, because we would all understand biblically, man, the way that Jesus talks about forgiveness in some of his parables, and even in the Lord's Prayer about the weightiness of, if we're not forgiving others, then we've not been forgiven. I mean, it's weighty. We have to forgive people and refuse to hold a grudge. if I was to, you could do like a whole nother seminar on what like forgiveness means. And I want to be real clear that in many cases, forgiveness doesn't mean that you engage in the same level of relationship with people. I think in the context of our work that we're talking about within Campus Renewal, it probably almost always does. But I don't want to put a burden upon anyone. I don't know what's happened in y'all's lives. There could be some really, really deep hurts in your family. And you can forgive someone without engaging in the same level of relationship depending on the type of hurts that's happened to you. So I don't want you to hear me say you've not forgiven someone if, you know, if you've been sexually abused or you've had a father that, you know, beat you or something like that. There's cases where you say, I can honestly forgive this someone, yet keep my distance because that's what I have to do. So I want to be clear on that as a side note. But generally speaking, the idea of conflict as it comes to our campus ministry, there's probably rare instances where you just have to totally break ground and say, we're not going to be friends anymore. We're not going to work together. I'm not going to pursue you. I think in almost every case, we should say we can forgive and not hold a grudge and continue to move forward. These ones are key ones. Pray for them. What happens when you start praying for people that you have arguments that you have difficulties with? Right. Often God speaks to you, reveals to you your problems in the matter. Your heart softens. That's why Jesus would say, pray for your enemies. Bless those that curse you. So serve them. I can think of when we very first started our work with Campus Renewal, one of the biggest churches and ministries was actually the church I was a part of, just kind of refused to pray together. They just didn't want to get engaged. And I got involved and I just started serving that ministry. I started leading discipleship groups within that college ministry and serving. I was just like, dude, I'm going to love this guy and this ministry until I win this dude over. And I did. He finally started to see the value in it and was, ended up being one of our most vocal advocates for the body of Christ working together. But it just by praying for people and serving them, that really makes a huge difference. This is a good one. No gossip. Or the way I like to word it is refuse to speak poorly about everyone. Man, this happens regularly. And it's not like really awful things, but we've got, you know, XYZ ministry doesn't want to connect with us, or this pastor's not been very cooperative. And you'll be in a setting, people will be like, hey, why isn't the, I'm making up a name here, so, you know, why isn't the Young Life guy connected with us? And they'll ask me directly, you know, like, so I'm like in this position of being like, because he's a jerk. You know, it's like, I just say, oh, you know, I've connected with him, he's an awesome guy. They're doing awesome stuff, they just haven't been able to make time to join us yet. I'm just like, I'm refusing to speak poor about anyone. And that's just a common way to grow in our holiness, is just to take that everywhere. That we just speak well of everybody, even our adversary or those that we seem to be in conflict with. Two more here. No bullying. This is particularly as it relates to our work in Unity. One of the things that you can do that I did when we first started Campus Renewal is you can start to build some momentum, and you've got a few men in the ministries that are starting to work together, and then you can kind of flip the switch now on the ones that aren't. And you can start to say like, aha, you don't believe in unity, you're bad. Look at all of us, we all agree with it. And you can do that in real, I wouldn't do that obvious, but in real ways you can do that. You can bully people into participating once you start to gain momentum. And just refusing to bully, just continuing to offer an open hand and say, hey, here's what we're about, here's what we're doing, and you can come along at your own pace. That's super important. And finally is always keep pursuing the friendship. Like I said, there are instances when fellowship has to be broken. You see it in Scripture. And you certainly see it in just wisdom within when really awful things happen. I would guess that in most of our cases in campus ministry, that's not the case. You can always pursue friendship with every single person that you have conflict with. And sometimes it's the steadfastness of continuing to pursue someone that ultimately reconciles the relationship. All you can do is continue to be the person who comes. It doesn't mean you have to have the same conversation over and over and over again. You can have the conflict conversation and try to find understanding and leave it. It doesn't mean you have to go back to the drawing board, but you can continue to be kind. You can continue to reach out. You can continue to call people into fellowship. You can continue to treat people well, engage in conversations when you're with them or see them. And so that's really what pursuing friendship means. That helpful a little bit? Mm-hmm. Cool. Last, we'll just talk about these. These are kind of like big principles that I think are overall helpful with any conflict. This is from Stephen Covey's Seven Habits book, so you all probably heard it before, but seek first to understand, and then to be understood. This is one of the most important things I think I've learned, is if you can enter into every conflict that you have, and really not just, it's not just semantics, it's not like a game, but truly in your heart say, at the very least in this conversation, I want to better understand their perspective. I want to understand why they believe what they believe. I want to understand how I hurt them. I want to understand what I did wrong. I want to understand how I can grow. And your number one goal is understanding and then explaining yourself. But can you guys agree that that doesn't happen often? Usually in the midst of conflicts, it's like, but, you know, here we go. Even you can hear the game in your head. Like, even as they're starting to talk, you're already like calculating your response. Finish your sentence. You know? But a real heart of understanding is to actually shut that off in your head, not be formulating your response, to just say, I'm going to listen. And that's why it's a goal to make questions, or this is understanding again. Make understanding a goal, which means you ask questions and listen. And if you can just train your mind, what if in the next conflict that you have, when you feel yourself starting to say, okay, finish your sentence, because I got a point to make. If you could switch it and say, finish your sentence, I've got a follow-up question to ask. Like, I want to understand what you're saying. I'm going to ask another question, another question, another question. And if you can seek first to be understood, I mean to understand them, you're going to have far better success in your conversation. And ultimately, hopefully, they're going to want to understand you after that. But at the very least, you've initiated and practiced it yourself that you're going to seek to understand them. That makes sense? See how that's probably like one of the most helpful things possible. This other one's like a psychological term that I'd like to just kind of describe, and I don't claim to be an expert at it, but I've been practicing it and thinking on it a lot for like about the last 10 years. I had a guy named Jim Harrington who was a mentor for me back in the early 2000s, and he was the one that kind of walked me through this idea. It's a psychological term called differentiation of self. So this isn't like a scriptural thing. So I don't want to, you know, claim it to be a scriptural thing. But we want to share this idea with you guys just because I think it can help you as you think about conflicts that you face. So I'll give you the definition of the psychological term. Differentiation is the capacity of a person to manage his or her emotions as well as thinking. Do y'all want to write it down? Should I say it slow? That help? Okay, all right, cool. Differentiation is the capacity of a person to manage his or her emotions as well as thinking. Capacity of a person to manage his or her emotions as well as thinking. Kind of a semicolon. Their individuality as well as their connections to others. Their individuality as well as their connections to others. So that's kind of the quick version of a definition of differentiation of self. Essentially, the theory goes like this, that in the context of every relationship, every family structure, every team, every core team that you have, every staff team that you have, there's two things that are kind of always at play. There's the individuality aspect of it, like here's who I am, here's my views, here's what I bring, here's my perspective, here's my history. And then there's the connectedness, where you're buying into a team and you're connecting with the team. And what happens is these are often at odds. And so you have this desire to be connected as a team, yet sometimes when you have to connect as a team, you think you have to sacrifice your individuality. So you think, well, I've got to sacrifice some things to do this. Or if you're trying to be like true to yourself and have your individuality, you break connection with the team because you've got your own views. And so what the argument is in this whole psychological theory is emotional maturity or differentiation of self is learning to be both individual and connected. It's the idea of, can you be in a community where you can be fully expressive of who you are and what you believe and your background and your thoughts, yet still remain connected to a team of people by expressing your, even though you're individual. And what happens, you usually get two types of people. There's what's called a bully and the chameleon. And so the bully's like really good at individuality. So they know what they believe, what they want, and they they're the bully. And so they're always willing to express their individuality. So you're in a conversation with someone and they'll just slam you with their political views. Blah, 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 here's what I believe, blah, 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 blah. And then the chameleon is the opposite. The chameleon doesn't want to ruffle anyone's feathers, and so they never really identify who they really are. And so someone, the bully, you know, says, here's what I believe about this. The chameleon just kind of stays quiet. And he says, okay, I'm not going to say anything here because I feel like I can't be connected to this person if I express my individuality. See how those two can constantly play to each other? So what the bully needs to grow in is they need to grow in the skill of listening. And what the chameleon needs to grow in is they need to grow in the skill of speaking up. And so what happens in a family dynamic and in a team dynamic is you're always having this kind of wrestling of self. And so one of the things in just conflict resolution is to think about how all those factors are at play. I think you could probably, like in this room, would it be fun? Let's do it. How many of you tend to be a bully? It doesn't mean you're bad. It sounds worse than a chameleon. But like a bully is, you know, happy to express their views. Yeah? Yeah? How many of you tend to be a chameleon? Yeah? That's cool. And so neither one is wrong. It's just in the context of a team, emotional maturity is when you're able to both believe differently from someone and yet stay connected. And that's really hard, right? And that's almost, you could say in some ways, is the nature of Campus Renewal's work. Can we work together? Can we get the Episcopalian and the Baptist to work together? And we know that they have different views on things, but can we do it in a way that they feel connected yet not compromise the individuality of their different views and practices and ministry philosophies? That's a hard work. The way that I best heard it phrased is learning to be with and disagree with. That's a real skill, right? To be able to be with someone and remain close, connected emotionally, committed to them, committed to be part of this community, yet also disagree. Now, any of us in our families, we'd all say that we have to do this, right? Who has a completely homogenous family that always agrees about everything, and always works together, and stays wonderfully connected at all times, right? So the bulk of this psychological theory actually starts with the family union. And often what happens is how you grew up in your family is what then is the ramifications for every other aspect of your life. And so it starts with kind of retraining yourself to think about, oh, wow, I grew up in this kind of family. And so the chameleon's got to say, hey, I've got to learn to be more individual. And the bully's got to say, hey, I've got to learn how to stay connected and not be so individual. That make sense?
Yeah.
Cool. I don't know if it helps, but it gives you a grid when you're in your next conflict. Cool?
Yeah.
Do you like 2 or 3 minutes of any questions or whatever? We got on time? You nailed it. 4:30. We're not cutting into free time. Free time's important.
I have a comment.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's great.
I mean, I would like kind of this side of the board. For sure. Isn't good. All good.
The scripture was on that side of the board.
I meant that, like, the Lord kind of gave me a word, like, when we came to that side, because, like, this is something I'm probably going to incorporate, like, with my free time for Lord in a couple minutes. But this side is kind of, he was like, yeah, like how we talked about what your heart is for earlier, Chris was talking about bringing out of a person what their heart burns for. One of the things that my heart burns for is race issues, race relations, especially in the South. This side of the board is exactly how I view racism. It's both sides unwilling to come together and understand.
Yeah.
And a lot of people like to make it out as the white privilege and versus like the white privilege bullying the black underdog or the Mexican underdog or the Asian underdog. But what they don't realize is both are victims. And until we get on a platform where both of us are willing to understand, we will continue to see such pain and anguish in our communities. And we'll continue to see this crazy.